Okay, test, test. Yeah, that seems to be working. Hello, welcome everyone. So today we're doing a small presentation about a tool that we came up at work with that's called Firmware Action. It, as the title says, helps building you all kinds of firmwares, and we don't go into more detail here yet because Firmware Action can be used for a multitude of things. So first of all, who are we? I'm Marvin, a firmware developer working at Nine Elements, as my shirt says here. And this is my lovely coworker.
Hello, I'm Wojciech, and I do DevOps mostly.
I did, so it's good. So what we want to go over today is building firmware is usually hard to do. For some reason, there are so many build systems, and it's always difficult to get a hold of all of them, understand all of them, especially if you're working in more than one project. Then we go over what is actually Firmware Action and how does it help us. So short introduction to Docker and a helper tool called Dagger. And then we do an example, and maybe if the demo gods are on our side, also a working demonstration. So, first of all, building firmwares. If you come across building host firmwares, BMC firmwares, embedded firmware, not so creative name, firmware minus action, it's an action that builds firmware. So what is it? It's kind of similar to what you know from makefile or taskfile. It just calls into different things and abstracts things away even further, and yet now you might be saying, oh yeah, yet another build system. How does that improve the whole situation? Did you want to get rid of some build systems? And it's not really a build system per se. It's simply just a executor of commands under known circumstances and doesn't really build stuff itself. So it gives us a unified environment using container technology. Doesn't need to be Docker, just anything that speaks OCI images. And builds in CI and builds locally are always the same, given that we now have containers on our side. And it doesn't matter if you're building on Windows, if you're building on Mac, if you're building on Linux, you get the same results throughout anyone using the system. It's written in Go, so it can cross-compile to almost any architecture that Go supports. We still have some minor issues with paths, but that's up to be fixed. It has GitHub Action integration already, but it is very low effort to integrate into other CI/CD systems that are not GitHub. It just started out there. And we also packaged a version for the AUR. So what you usually see when you split some CI systems and your local development, you have some build YAMLs or other scripts, whatever GitLab uses right now, and locally you might have some artisanal shell script to just call into all your tools so that you don't need to type out all of the make commands or whatever tool is being used in that. And this all together then fetches, obviously, your code that you have locally or in your remote repository and builds the thing. And now with our unification, we have the same results in CI and local by just using the tool plus its configuration, which is written in JSON, and obviously the code and configurations of your tool that you previously had. So with that, I'll switch over to Wojciech to help us explain a bit more about Docker and how Dagger fits into the build.
Hello, hello. So does any of you actually know Docker? Have you heard about that? Oh, nice. So essentially, Docker is a somewhat a virtualization environment for often used for development. It allows you to package together all kinds of dependencies for all kinds of systems. Doesn't matter if you are running Arch or Fedora, you can still Dockerize Debian packages, for example. It's very convenient. You can use different versions, you can use older versions, so it is a super great thing for development, and hence we wanted to use it for this. But we couldn't use it standalone. That's where the Dagger comes in. Dagger is a Docker orchestrator. It sits on top of it, and essentially it allows you to take a Docker container and execute commands inside it, define environment variables, also things like that. So it's programmable CI/CD engine, essentially. The idea is that you could create your CI/CD once in Dagger and then run it everywhere in GitHub, locally, GitLab, SourceHub, whatever comes to your mind. So we decided to use this to basically leverage what we wanted to do. And that's the core technology. So the example that we have made, this is from the example repository. This is the JSON configuration. So, for example, over there, the fourth line, you have SDK URL. That's the URL to the container you want to use to build, in this case, Coreboot. We pre-built all of the containers, so you don't have to build them yourself. We have multiple versions dating back, I think the oldest is 4.19, something like that. We also have EDK2, Linux, whatever you name it. So you define your container there, and then you define additional paths, like where is the Coreboot repository that you are trying to build? Where is the configuration file for your Coreboot, and so on? Where do you want to output the result of this endeavor? You can also define blobs, like Intel FSP, management engine, things like that. It will automatically figure out what to do with them and put them in. So that's a very nice thing, if I do say so myself. And also at the bottom, you can define inputs. So the whole idea behind this is that you can define a Coreboot module. You can also define EDK2 module, UROOT module, Linux module, and then you can pipe output of one into the next one. So you can build the whole stack in one single whoop. For which we have a what's called a recursive build. In GitHub, this is the YAML that you could use. You have some kind of checkout of your repository where you might have the Coreboot or other projects as Git submodules or whatever you fancy as alternative. Then you just call firmware action with the configuration file, which module you want to build, and if you want to build it recursively. Recursively means it will build all of the dependencies like Linux, UROOT, whatever you might define there. And in the end, you just upload the artifacts to the GitHub. It's as easy as that. And if you want to run the same thing locally, you just install firmware action or compile it from the sources, called build, and again, config, target, and if you want to do a recursive build or not. If you want to abstract this away a little bit more and make it a little bit more convenient, you could also use something like task file, where you define that you want standalone Coreboot, or you want Coreboot with Linux baked in. You can define some variables and so on. So essentially, that's the whole premise. Then we have a demo, if that will work. So let's try that. Oh, yes.
So while you're preparing your demo, another good thing is about that all of these containers, one thing about Dagger is it will use API calls into any container engine. So the default is to use Docker, but if you have Podman or just raw container D or whatever, what it will do is whatever it finds on your system, it will run API calls. Those are defined directly in the Go code. And based on what you've written in your in and outputs, we'll turn this into ephemerally created containers, mutate them on the fly, and output whatever you defined there. So essentially, you tell it what goes in, what goes out, and how to operate with that. And then it will just, in those containers, which have a specifically known good environment for each of these firmware stacks that we already predefined, call their build systems. It will not touch any of their build systems, so it will operate as if you're just doing that locally, except now much more conveniently and with much more confidence that your environment does not affect the build if it's running on your machine or if it's running on a coworker's machine.
Yes, so here's the example of the JSON configuration file. Right now we support only JSON, but we might extend it to more systems later. So in this example, we have a core boot, which is supposed to have a Linux kernel baked in. So here you define that it depends on the Linux kernel. Here you define the Linux kernel. You also define that Linux will use its own container made for that. And you can also say this Linux container will use a uroot inside. And here below, you define your uroot. And with these dependencies, then you can have the whole tree defined like so. All right, so I already tried to execute this because it's a demo, but yeah. Demos are always very funky, so let me clear this. Perfect. So I have defined a task file which does only firmware action dash dash build dash dash config dash dash target. In this case, it's built the core boot with Linux, and because I already built it before, it has already everything cached. It detects there are no changes in the sources, so it will not try to rebuild them. It just shows you everything is up to date. So the uroot is up to date. That's the one module which has no dependency at all. Linux, which depends on the uroot, is also up to date. And then the core boot, which depends on the Linux, also up to date. So basically, you're done. I could try to maybe. How much time we have?
7 minutes.
Oh, nice. So if we give me a second.
So while he's trying to figure out the rest of the demo, the core idea which sparked the project.
So the core idea which sparked the project is that oftentimes these build systems, especially if they consist of multiple parts, take away from developers' time. You need to fiddle around with them too much. And especially if you're changing something in Linux, when you have a core boot Linux boot, uroot stack, and then you need to figure out which you need to rebuild now. Do I need to rebuild only the kernel, or do I need to change something here now as well? Now you can focus solely on just coding and rerun the build system, and it will figure out for you where things changed, where it knows how to rerun some stuff. Plump things together, and you can just focus on coding, run building, and you get a binary out of it, just so that more time can be spent doing things that are actually, I'd say, important to do and not to care about, because building something should be easy and it should always be the same. So this is how we created it. I think we're mostly at a point where we can already move into a round of questions. Okay, so this is an example where he removed some of the caches.
I didn't really remove the caches. I just touched the README in Linux kernel, so now it will not rebuild uroot because that's already up to date, but it will try to rebuild the Linux kernel because I just changed one file. So it is rebuilding that, and then it will also rebuild the core boot because that depends on this Linux kernel. So that's the whole idea of this dependency tree. So I guess now questions. Yes?
Yes, you mentioned that the Intel FSP requires Windows. How do you go around that?
So it does require some Windows toolings, and it actually just expects the Windows user space. For the FSP, we did some hacks there to pull in some of the Microsoft toolings into a Linux environment and make them work in a really, really makeshift environment. It works. It's still kind of a Linux container, but the setup is so finicky that abstracting it away in a simple container just helped us to make this work more properly. It's basically requires what EDK2 requires with some extra sprinkled on top. Yes, we're losing changes to the vendors or customers directly. So I think as a hobbyist, there is no legal way to obtain them. But otherwise, you can obtain them from Intel with set vendor license. Yes?
Are you considering doing binary releases for specific machines that you support?
Sure. We could do that. It's basically a matter of figuring out the licensing because there are so many projects involved that we need to make sure that whatever we distribute is actually redistributable, especially if blobs are involved, because firmware action does allow to supply you a arbitrary amount of blobs, and those are often tricky when it comes to licensing. But other than that, I see no issue in doing that. For now, we just cared about the tool itself and not what it actually outputs itself. That's mostly for internal use right now, but for all the public stuff, I see no problem doing that.
What you could do with firmware files that aren't legally redistributable is provide the images without them and then have a script to insert them.
Yeah, sure. There's also a way that's just called a stitching stage where you could do exactly that already in firmware action. Just provide like everything as a blob and then tell it where everything goes in the binary, and then it will do just that. But you can also use any other tool. It's just convenient for us to just have one tool that does it all. Any more questions? I think that's not the case, and with that, we can end a few seconds early.